Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and joining me in the studio today is Shannon Rauter. She is the OSU Extension Clatsop County Master Gardener and Small Farms Coordinator. Did I get all that right?
Nailed it. Nice job, Teresa.
Thanks, Shannon. Thank you so much for being here. Our show today came about from I was brought to my attention about a cool project that Master Gardeners are working on actually here at the KMUN station in Astoria, and you are helping them deal with a massive invasive plant and weed problem here at the studio. They seem to have just about everything that you would not want to have in a garden. I mean, there's ivy, there's blackberry, there's just all kinds of stuff. And you had your first work party last night, and I just want to put it out there. These are work parties that the community can join in on, and they're happening every Monday?
Yep, Monday in July from 5:30 to 7:30 in the evening. Swing by anytime. We need all the hands we can get.
Maybe bring a machete or a chainsaw. I don't know.
Yeah, machete was the most popular tool by far last night.
So it got me thinking about this time of year because, you know, it's summer. We've had a very weird, warm, cold, wet, hot spring leading into summer. And that, I feel like, just sets up the perfect conditions for explosive weed growth, both annual and perennial. And I know I'm dealing with just a whole host of terrible things on my farm and trying to stay on top of it. I've heard from, you know, friends who have gardens. It's just like, it's crazy this year. And it just seemed like a good time to talk about, let's talk about weeds. Let's talk about weeds and weeding. And what do you do? How can you stay on top of these things? Because it can be so overwhelming, right? You look at this like bank of blackberries or ivy or scotch broom or something, or just like thistles all in your garden. And it can be so disheartening. So like, what do you think, Shannon?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think everyone thinks that I'm going to have some like secret silver bullet for them of what will magically make all the weeds go away. And the sad answer is it's just a lot of weeding, just staying on top of it,
constant vigilance,
making sure stuff doesn't go to seed is the biggest thing. So yeah. If you're starting, maybe laying out like a priority list and starting with the things that grow fastest, so making sure that those don't go to seed first. Mm-hmm. And then also maybe starting by like preserving, if you have some really perennials that are important to you or trees that you want to protect, kind of weeding, you know, a perimeter around those to start with, and then working out from there can be a good approach if you're feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah, because some of these vining weeds, like things like morning glory and even blackberries, they can just engulf plants. And then, you know, the plant, if it can't really reach the sun, if it can't outcompete, it's just going to wither and, you know, potentially die if it's just engulfed long enough, which is really hard, especially if it's a plant you really like. I was telling Shannon earlier about a poor lilac that's by my back porch. And, you know, I mean, I've got so many things I'm dealing with. And there, I've got, both morning glory and vinca, which I'm sure the vinca was an intentional plant. So vinca is this like ground cover, gets these very beautiful little purple flowers on it. And people are often like, oh, but it's so pretty. We should just let that go. And I'm just here to say, don't let that go.
Don't let anything go.
it spreads, it takes over, it's not well behaved. I mean, I don't know many weeds that are well behaved, and that's maybe the problem, is a lot of them they're just plants that are really, really good at outcompeting other things.
Yeah, and I think weeds can be indicative of other problems you're having with your soil, right? Like we talked about, a lot of weeds are going to thrive because you have low fertility or low pH, and our cultivated plants that we want have kind of stricter requirements, but weeds will just, they'll monopolize any situation. So sometimes as you're removing weeds, maybe think about getting a soil test done too. Think about liming or fertilizing to help your plants that you do want outcompete the weeds better.
Yeah, you know, there's one weed that I've really struggled with a lot, and I know a lot of gardeners do as well. I think people call it sheep sorrel. It's this little, it's an awful, it has these runners that go underground that create this thick mat, and then it flowers. It's like these really small red flowers, and then it goes to seed. So it's one of those annoying weeds that spreads both by seed and by runners, because if you leave a little bit of the root in the ground, it can grow from that as well. And I was really trying, I have so much of this, and but I have a lot less now because I've read, I mean, we've been vigilant about pulling it out, but also it doesn't, it likes a really low soil pH. It likes really acidic soil. And so as we've amended our beds and are raising the soil pH in the areas where we're growing crops, I'm noticing a lot less of it coming back. And I think it's both, you know, the weeding, but also the culture, the environment is changing to something that it doesn't like growing in as much. And it's still out in the pastures, it's still out in the world, but I'm not seeing it in the areas where I don't want it to be. And so that's something.
Yeah, that's exciting progress.
You know, I mean, talk to me about my morning glory. Yeah. Which are, I mean, and these are things too, where you have, I think it's important to understand the plant that you're trying to get rid of. Because is it something that, like a thistle, you know, that's a biennial. So it's got, like, the first year it's just going to set leaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it sets up the flower.
Yeah, it's going to really just focus on getting a lot of vegetative growth in that first year and maybe putting energy into, like, a taproot or some kind of underground storage. And then the next year, as soon as conditions are ready, it's going to flower. So you really need to know what you're, if you're dealing with a biennial or a perennial, and you want to make sure you get those biennials at the right stage.
And those taproots can regrow. Yeah. So sometimes if you just go along and cut it off, it'll still grow back from that taproot. Dandelions can do the same thing. And so you do sometimes need to dig down and try and get as much of that taproot out as you can. And I will tell you, it's a lot easier to do that when it's just the little rosette of leaves than when you've got like a 4 foot tall, 3 foot wide bull thistle that you're trying to dig out before it goes to flower. And I know sometimes I just go along, if something is flowering or God forbid setting seed, I will go along and just cut those, like have a trash bag, cut the flowers or the seed heads off and just put them in a trash bag to at least get those out of the way, because the seed is what you want to stop.
Yes, definitely. And if you're dealing with noxious weeds and getting seeds like that, then you want to make sure that you're actually throwing your trash bag in the trash.
Oh yeah, don't compost
this
stuff.
Don't compost it. Don't reintroduce it into the stream to end up in topsoil that someone else buys, please.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can burn the weeds too, but you got to check if there's burn bans. Check if you're
Yeah. I've doing sometimes that I've left roots out to desiccate in the sun. I mean, you kind of have to have an area to do that, but I do that sometimes with morning glory that I'm pulling out, or some of the really bad rhizomatous grasses. I don't know the name of the one that I have. It's just evil. I call it the evil grass. I don't know what it is. But it just has these roots that run underground. They're very fleshy. They break really easily. So it's smart. It's trying to leave some root in the ground because it'll grow from that. And it'll also grow from the seeds that, you know, the seed heads that set. And so, yeah, again, you've got to like make sure it doesn't set seed, but also try and get all the roots out. And it's a tough one.
Yeah, the grasses can be really tricky. And a lot of our pasture producers in the county are dealing with that too, because it's really hard to manage grass weeds in grass pastures. We've got like a lot of reed canary grass in the county. Do you have any of that on your property?
We have some small patches of it. I don't know whose idea that was to. I think someone thought it was a good pasture grass or something. And it's not.
It was introduced.
I know. And most of these things are, sadly. I mean, a lot of the most noxious weeds are things that were introduced. Someone thought it was a good idea, or it came by accident. And maybe sometimes that's how it shows up on your property too. Maybe it accidentally comes in some topsoil or some compost. It can come on someone's shoe. Mm-hmm. You know, it can come on through birds. I feel like birds spread a lot of things.
Definitely. You have a lot of birds on your property, which is nice, but it's a double-edged sword.
It is. You know, they spread things like holly. They spread cotoneaster, which is one of my least favorite plants in the universe. And again, that was one that was introduced as an ornamental. They spread ivy. And a lot of people don't maybe realize that ivy flowers and sets like a little fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And does that usually happen like way up in a tree?
Yeah, the ivy will definitely climb very high up. And so you won't even always see those flowers if it's high up in the tree, but they will set those little berries. And yeah, I'm sure the birds are eating those all the way up there.
With ivy in a tree, is it really just best to like go and cut it off at the base and try and create a gap?
Yeah, exactly. So you're trying to create a gap, basically as tall as yourself, if you can, basically cut at the base and then all the way up to where you can reach easily on foot, and remove all that. But then anything that's cut above leave it. Don't pull that off of the tree, because if you're pulling the vines from higher off the tree, that could damage the tree. So yeah, you just want to cut it off from the ground and make sure that it can't reconnect to the ground, or the pieces can't reconnect, basically. So just trying to stay vigilant about
it. But
it
will try to reconnect?
Basically, I mean, the roots will keep growing up, and then the top will try to send some growth down. Yeah.
That is evil.
I know. It's just something
I mean, it's
out of a movie.
Smart. I mean, that is actually a really... I mean, I have to say that I am really in awe of a lot of these plants, because their ability to thrive is phenomenal. I mean, think about blackberries.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
You almost want to root for them, you know? Mean, they're a real underdog story, but then they've just turned into bullies. It's gone too far.
It's true. And it is just a lot of these plants are kind of bullies. And, you know, so there's the physical cutting, there's the physical removal. Again, be really mindful of what you're cutting and where you're throwing it away. Because if they are really, really invasive plants, I mean, I think you can take a lot of it to the green waste at the dump.
Yeah, it just depends on how the plant is propagated. Oregon State University has a great resource called Solve Pest Problems that's geared toward home gardeners and has a lot of weed-specific information on there. So if you're dealing with a specific weed, you can search on that website and it'll tell you whether it can be thrown in the trash, whether it can be composted, like kind of what the best way to deal with the plant material is. It's also going to depend on how much you have. You know, like ivy should be going in the trash. It shouldn't be getting composted. But with what we're dealing with here at KMUN, there's so much of it and we only have so much space that we're going to kind of try to dry it out for a little bit first and see then, is it feasible to bring it to the landfill? Does it need to go to green waste? What's the best way to deal with it? And yeah. Another thing, too, to mention also is plant identification is really important. A lot of people think they know the major weeds, but for every invasive, there's usually a native version of it. And we want to be careful to protect those natives if we find them. So, like, we have our invasive Armenian or Himalayan blackberry, but there's also the native trailing blackberry, which is going to have 3 leaflets instead of 5 leaflets. And so sometimes you'll see people being like, oh, we have to remove all the blackberry, and they don't even realize that there's a native.
That native blackberry is so good. I mean, it can be kind of annoying, and it's funny, I have a lot of it growing along the fence line of one of my big growing areas because the birds love to sit on the fence. And so my fence line is just this, I mean, and some of it's like, oh, it's the native trailing blackberry. It's cascara, it's the trees. You know, I've got like native crab apples coming up. You know, sometimes it's like a wild plum. And I don't really want any of those on my fence line, but I do but the native blackberries are actually, if you have a space where you can let it go, those are great and they're delicious.
Yeah, they are really good. But yeah, they do spread more like,
well,
on the
ground cover, yeah.
Upright,
so. I mean, they'll climb things if they have something to climb, but yeah. But you're right. I think ID is really important, and I know there's phone applications, mm-hmm. apps that you can use for IDing. There's that iNaturalist,
or Seek.
Yeah,
yeah. Seek is kind of the kids' version of iNaturalist.
Okay, maybe that's the one I'm using. I don't know.
I find most people use it. It's a lot more user friendly, but your data doesn't actually like go into the public, like it's mm-hmm. a lot more private, which is why it was designed for kids to use it. Uh-huh. But so yeah, if you want to contribute to the scientific community, I encourage people to use iNaturalist, but if Seek is what works for you, go for it. Yeah. Also the like built-in phone ones on your iPhone or Android or whatever have gotten a lot better with their ID.
And this is just something where you need to, like, you hold your phone camera up to the plant and it can sometimes it can't recognize what it is, or it can just get you to like a family, but it won't necessarily know the exact thing. But a lot of times it does get you down to the exact thing. And then you know what you're dealing with. Another option I'm going to throw out there, because I want you to talk about this too, is to contact the Clatsop County Master Gardeners or Columbia County Master Gardeners or Tillamook County Master Gardeners, wherever you are. We're listening to this. There's a Master Gardener group that you can reach out to. And this time of year, especially, they're doing a lot of, you know, clinics and they're at farmers markets, and or you can bring it to the extension office. You can like take a plant sample, like put it and maybe describe, like if somebody wants a plant identified, what would they do?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're not phone savvy, if you don't know how to do that, we're here to help you at the Extension office. So you can bring a physical plant to the Extension office. You can also, like, if you take a picture on your phone and don't know how to send it, you can just bring that in and we'll help you with that. And then we have Master Gardeners at Astoria Sunday Market every other week. The Clatsop County Master Gardener Association has a booth there. And every week at Seaside Wednesday Market. So you can always go up to them at the market. We usually have 3 or 4 volunteers there. And they're just there to chat gardening and answer any questions you have. So they can be a really helpful resource.
I think the more information you can bring, the better. Because I remember this from doing those plant clinics when I was in, like, Master Gardener training. And it, you know, sometimes someone will just say, like, hey, I've got this plant and it's good. Really big, and it's got these dark green leaves, and I don't know what to do about it.
It's most plants.
I need a little bit more information than that. So, some really good pictures, and potentially some leaves or some sample is going to get you a lot closer to an identification.
That's a great point. Yeah,
bring
a branch. Don't bring a single leaf. You know that's kind of an important distinction.
It's really true. Anyway, I just want to take a brief break here to reintroduce my guest. If you're just joining us on today's In Season, I'm speaking with Shannon Router, and she is the OSU Extension for Clatsop County Master Gardener and Small Farms Coordinator. And if you couldn't tell already, we're talking about weeds. We're talking about noxious weeds, annual weeds, perennial weeds. And what do you do about them? It's such an explosion of them this year with the weather conditions we've had. And I think sometimes people just get really discouraged and overwhelmed. And especially if you have, like, a really bad patch, what do you do? And, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before the show started. I know a lot of home gardeners are reluctant to go down this path. But I know something that's become very popular in the small farm world are tarps, black plastic tarps. People call them silage tarps. I know around here, people call them bunker tarps.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah,
actually.
I know. I went into asking for, and was like, "Oh, you mean bunker tarps?" So I'm like, I thought I meant silage tarps. I think it just depends on where you are in the country, what, you know, where you've learned the term from, and what it's being used for. But these are just—it's a heavier duty black plastic. It's usually UV resistant. Sometimes they're fully black. Sometimes they're black on one side and white on the other. And the thing about black plastic, as opposed to like a woven weed cloth, is that the plastic is really gonna just kill everything underneath it. The black creates like a heat underneath it, and just things can't, they can't grow under it.
Yeah, and it's not breathable. Like, a weed fabric is breathable. It's permeable to water, so stuff is getting through. Mm-hmm. So it's going to block your, you know, weed fabric will block your smaller annual plants. But for your larger perennial ones, you want to be just, you're basically just sealing it off. No light's getting in, no water's getting in. And that eventually is going to stop the plants underneath from growing. You're still going to have somewhat of a seed bank, but the goal is hopefully a lot of stuff will try to germinate or regrow, and it'll try to grow out and reach the light, but it just won't make it in time before it dies.
Yeah, and it isn't attractive. And, you know, I get that. And, you know, it's easy for me to say on a farm, you know, it's like, who cares what it looks like? But this has been the only way that I've been able to deal with some things. I've had some, like, ground bindweed come in to some of my growing beds. Some of this evil grass that I talk about, I don't know what it is. It can poke up through woven weed cloth and then just establish itself on top of the weed cloth. I have some things that I've intentionally planted that have become pretty noxious, like a Peruvian lily that I curse. And these things, like, if you can put the plastic down. And I mean, I feel like you want to try and at least cover it for an entire growth cycle. So that's 12 months.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, sometimes 2 years is better. And I know that's a long time to have an area under an ugly black plastic tarp. But if you really, really want to clean your ground, this is what you have to do. And then also know that once you pull that tarp off, there's a seed bank there. So you've got to be really vigilant about weeding it. Because I've done this too, where I've, like, pulled the tarp off and it's beautiful, clear soil. Look, it looks so good. And then I'll forget to, like, get into that right away. And after a rain and some warm weather, and boom, it's covered with weeds again.
Yeah, it can happen really, like, that can happen in a week. I think it's an important tool you have to remember that you still have to remove the weeds before you put the tarp on.
Yeah.
For the most part, like get rid of all the biomass that's there, whether you weed whack it or mow it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you put the tarp on, and it's a powerful tool if you have a big area that you're not quite ready to deal with yet or mm-hmm. not quite ready to replant yet. Then instead of like having to mow the weeds down every few weeks, you just have to monitor the edges of the tarp where stuff might be growing out from,
mm-hmm.
and then you just let it sit. So it's a much more passive way to deal with weeds.
Yeah.
And then you're not spraying anything, which is nice too. So
yeah, I mean, we've been really avoiding talking about herbicides, and I understand people use them. I understand the whys. There's things people consider organic, like, you know, vinegars or things like that. I haven't found those to be super effective. And one of the reasons I really hesitate, especially this time of year, to spray is because there are so many insects out and about. And I'm already seeing a massive reduction in the number of bees and on our farm, which is really heartbreaking and scary. So I don't want to do anything that's going to cause them any more harm than they've already been dealing with. And so if you can avoid spraying, you know, weed whacking can be a really good way to do it. Sometimes you might need to be using a weed whacker with a blade on it if you're going after blackberries. And this might be something you need to hire somebody to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or find a friend who knows how to do this and bake them a really nice pie or cook them dinner or whatever they need and get them to come and deal with some of your stuff. Because, you know, a really good session with a blade weed whacker can deal with a lot of this stuff. And then, you know, again, haul a lot of that plant material away, cover it. You know, if you don't like the idea of black plastic, I've also had some luck with like thick layers of cardboard and like wood chips on top, and really thick layers of wood chips, and stuff will poke through that, but then it becomes easier to pull and easier to monitor. And again, you just really have to stay on top of it. But that can be a way of, if you really don't want to use plastic, but I'm talking thick, like a foot or more of wood chips on top of a really thick layer of cardboard.
Yeah, like four sheets of cardboard,
yeah.
Wet it down, and then all the wood chips on top.
Yeah.
And that's going to depend a lot. Like, what works is going to be different for every site,
mm-hmm.
right? The KMUN site here is super steep. So I was thinking about cardboard and wood chips, and then we got into it, and I looked more and was like, I don't think cardboard, like wood chips are just going to fall
right
down the slope on cardboard. So for a more sloped area, that might not work. But definitely for a lot of your more like urban in-town areas, or if you're in an HOA and you need it to look a certain way, cardboard can be a really good tool.
Yeah. And it is effective. And I have also, you know, dealt with some pretty nasty areas through just vigilance of that. Doing that constant, and you know, you need a source of wood chips. A lot of times you can talk to, you know, an arborist, tree trimmers. I think you just need to be careful about what you're, you know, about the wood chips, and make sure that it's not a tree that had ivy growing all over it that's being chipped up, because then you're just spreading ivy.
Yeah.
So that's a hard thing too. And sometimes the arborists can say, yeah, this didn't have anything in it, but sometimes they can't. And I mean, you can buy wood chips too, you know, and sometimes that's an expense, but if you're not doing a huge area, the investment in some of those wood chips can be worth it again. And the thing about, I just want to go back to the black plastic. This is not great. And eventually it all ends up at the dump, and that's terrible. I've done way too many like dump runs of shame with all the plastic, but it is UV resistant. So it will not break down for a number of years, but eventually it will become brittle and it will shred, and it can start to shred into very small pieces. And I am saying that also out of experience and shame for being like contributing to the master microplastic on my farm, because, you know, I've done that and I've left it too long, and then you go to pull it up and it's like, oh, it's just crumbling. So if you're gonna do that, you know, yeah, leave it for a year, leave it for two if you can, but then pull it up, fold it up, maybe move it to a different area, or give it to a friend who needs to do, you know, needs to kill some weeds on their property too.
Yeah, definitely just staying on top, like knowing how old it is, maybe write down when you bought it, have a sense of what its lifespan is. That way you're not letting it break down in the environment.
I mean, I would say like probably most people who are dealing with like a home garden situation, that, you know, you want to get into that area and plant other things. And, you know, so something can be like, if you can use a tarp to really do some like killing of things for a while, and then, you know, maybe you're rescuing some plants or you're planting some shrubs, like then maybe you could do like the cardboard and bark around the plants and really try to stay on top of the area that way.
Yeah, and you can do like, you can put out the cardboard and then make holes for big plants you want to put in and plant those, and then wood chip around them. I've seen people do that way. Definitely, I think when managing weeds, it's important to keep in mind what do you want to do with it next? What are your goals? Because you don't really want to clear an area, and like there's maintaining the weeds. That's good. We want to keep on top of that. But if we're, you know, if we just bought a new property and it's full of blackberries and all this stuff, we don't want to clear an area until we're ready to plant it and deal with it, because otherwise they're just going to keep coming back. So they definitely be thinking about what to plant next and how you're going to do that.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, also be mindful of, you know, you may be comfortable with the weeds in your garden and you don't care if they flower and set seed, but they're spreading to your entire neighborhood. You know, your thistles don't stay on your property. Your morning glory doesn't stay on your property. Your scotch broom.
Your tansy ragwort. Things that are toxic to livestock. Yeah,
they spread. And, you know, they spread on the wind. They spread on car tires. They spread on shoes. They spread lots of different ways. And so part of dealing with your weeds is being a good neighbor. And, you know, not contributing to, like, the constant state of awful weed action everywhere. So I think that's part of it. Will you mention again the website that people can go? You said there was an OSU website for people to look up their weeds.
Yeah, it's called Solve Pest Problems. I think it's solvepestproblems.oregonstate.edu. They also have insect pests. They have like vertebrate pests on there, like deer and things as well. So a lot of great resources. It's much more geared toward homeowners than our resources in the past were. So they're still developing it out, but they have all your major weeds that you'd be dealing with on there, like blackberry, ivy, scotch broom. They've got a page for each of those, and they break it down really clearly what the different control measures are.
That's super helpful. I definitely encourage people to check that out if you've got any of those things or even more than that. And then if you're curious, yeah, reach out to Master Gardeners. You can go to the Extension office. You can call the Extension office. Do you know your phone number?
Yeah, it's 503-325-8573 is our front office.
Okay. And Master Gardeners are in there a couple times a week?
Usually right now we're trying a little like different system where they kind of like sign up for a week on call. So right now it's just me in the office, but we'll have volunteers back in the office every Tuesday starting in September.
Mm-hmm. Or you can look for Master Gardeners at the Astoria Sunday Market or the Seaside
Wednesday Market. Yes.
And, you know, just and also like reach out to your neighbors, reach out to people and just ask questions. If you're not a very experienced gardener, check in with someone in your neighborhood who maybe is, or a friend, and just ask for advice. Because a lot of times people are willing to help. Yeah. People have a lot of opinions on how to deal with weeds.
Yeah, and come on Mondays to KMUN on Exchange Street in July, Monday evenings, and weed with us and learn about ivy and blackberry removal.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes hands-on is the best way to learn. And you're also helping community and helping these things not spread in the Astoria area. So thank you for joining us. Good luck with your weeds this year. I hope you stay on top of them. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much.